Disaster.
It is that time again. We catch up with the experts. Rather ask the experts before you spread fake news. And it's so easy to do, hey, on WhatsApp groups. Yes, some people get riled up. And I always say, let's check the facts, shall we? On the line is the is Professor Helen Rees, who chairs the South Africa Medical Control Council for South Africa. I know you're very busy, but thank you for your time again, Professor. Good morning.
Good morning, Martin. Thank you for having me.
So let's quickly start with the vaccines, shall we?
Yes.
In terms of the rollout here in South Africa, I mean, obviously there've been a couple of hiccups, but are you satisfied that we are getting back on track?
Well, I think it's very encouraging that we're now getting importation of some of the vaccines. Unfortunately, the has been delayed, and this isn't anything to do with South Africa. This is to do with the manufacturing problem. But we are getting Pfizer vaccines in, and we'll be starting rolling those out.
Did you say there was a hold-up with the Johnson & Johnson? You just
broke
away. Yes,
and it's a manufacturing problem. So it isn't anything to do with South Africa. It's unfortunately a larger problem externally. Mm.
But there's so much talk about the fact that, I don't know, one of the vaccines is produced, is it Port Elizabeth?
One of them will be, yes, the J&J vaccine. That's quite correct, at Aspen Pharmaceutical.
Are there still people who are scared of the vaccine, who are unsure whether they should take the vaccine? Is that still a big problem?
Well, I think once we roll out the vaccine, we'll see whether this is or isn't a big problem. But there are certainly people who are anxious. And as we know, we've seen a very rare side effect occur with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and with the AstraZeneca vaccine, which causes clots in the brain.
Talk to me about that.
Yes, it's very, very rare. There have been 8 cases in just about 7 million people in the U.S. for the J&J vaccine. But the risk of this condition occurring with COVID infection is probably about 100 times higher. So what this is what's the benefit and what's the risk? This is extremely rare, and we don't even definitely know whether we can attribute it to the vaccine or not. But of course, when you get something like this, it does make people nervous. We understand that. It makes the population say, oh, should I do this? And my message would be very, very clearly is that many of you now will know people who've had COVID. Many of you will know people who've been in hospital, in ICUs, and some who've died. I've just probably out everyone in the country. This is a nasty infection. Nobody wants to have it. And the sooner we can get everyone offered a vaccine, the better. And I would just encourage everyone to have the vaccine. The benefit far exceeds any potential risk.
Have they come up with any risks for the Pfizer one? I mean, you've left that one out. You said the Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca. Are some vaccines different to others?
Yes, they are. And the Pfizer vaccine has a different, what we call platform, a very different platform. The risk that's been picked up there is a severe allergic reaction. And that's one of the reasons why people will find when you've had the vaccine, you'll be asked to sit down and wait at the vaccination site for a period of time. But we're aware of that. It's very, very uncommon. We've seen a few allergic reactions in the healthcare worker rollout for J&J, and all of those have been successfully managed. But that would be the risk, the biggest risk, I would say, from Pfizer at the moment, from what we know of Pfizer at the moment. And that's been rolled out to even more people than the J&J, many, many millions of people worldwide.
What kind of allergic reaction are you talking?
Well, it's a severe one where it's a sort of total body allergy, where the airway in particular gets affected. So it's one that does need very urgent intervention, but it happens quickly. It's not one that you go home and a day later it'll happen. Oh. It happens very quickly. But I would just say to everybody that all the vaccines, we've got 2 now, we're hoping to get more. We're in discussion with other vaccine manufacturers as well, from SAHPRA's point of view. So all the vaccines will have sort of vaccine side effects that people are probably familiar with, you know, aches and pains, headache, perhaps feeling a bit shivery. A lot of those will have, not everyone gets them, some people might get those side effects.
But that would be true for flu vaccines in general, and a lot of medication will always list side effects. You know, but what you're saying is the positive of it, the upside of it, far outweighs, obviously, these possible side effects.
Absolutely. Yes.
When it comes to the next wave, the third wave, so to speak, I heard reports this morning already saying that it's not going to be as severe, or it's not as severe. What are your feelings about a next wave?
Well, I think, as you well know, we've all been holding our breath saying that we think there will be a next wave. I think what we're hoping is that the next wave won't be as severe as that second wave, which was also partly driven by the variant that that emerged in South Africa at that time.
Variant two.
The variant which you'll hear people describe as either 501YV2 or B1351. This is the variant that occurred in. That has occurred and is a dominant variant in South Africa, and that drove that second wave. But if there's a good thing about having had such a big second wave, one of them is that a lot of people will have antibodies, which we would hope would protect them against a third wave. So there'll be a lot of natural immunity. I think that what we really need to do is we've immunized nearly 400,000 healthcare workers, but I think we all recognize that's not enough. We need to go faster. We need to get these vaccines and we need to get them out, because that will protect against future waves. That's not going to be of huge benefit at this stage, apart from for the healthcare workers who've received the vaccine, because we simply haven't had the vaccines to roll out fast enough yet. But that's going to become an extremely important activity.
Talk to me quickly about the variant out of India at the moment that has reached South Africa.
Yes, this is, I mean, all these variants have these long names. B1617 is the name of this variant. And four cases have been reported here in South Africa, two in Gauteng and two in KwaZulu-Natal, and all associated with people who've recently returned from India. This variant, as we know, is a major variant in the new huge wave that's sweeping India. But there are other variants also in India that might also be accelerating that wave. But this is the one that people are worried about. This is now called a variant of interest by the World Health Organization, which means that it's recognized that this is a variant that is causing community transmission. We're seeing multiple cases, multiple outbreaks, but in multiple countries. What isn't completely clear yet is whether this variant is actually increasing the transmissibility of the virus, or whether it's increasing or worsening the course of disease. That we don't, the WHO hasn't yet confirmed that, but that clearly is the concern. And in South Africa, we're going to watch this very closely. The four cases have been identified and contacts will be traced. There'll be isolation for those who are infected and quarantine for those who've been in close contact. But we need to watch all of this very closely. We would hope that the immunity that people have got, those of who've been infected in South Africa, would give them at least some protection against this
this new variant. Are variants, the symptoms from one variant to the next, is it different? I mean, is one variant more dangerous to people than the other?
Well, I think that that's one of the things that obviously everyone is looking at very closely. And there are the other category, which is the sort of the third category of variants, is a variant of concern. And the one that we have in South Africa, our dominant variant, is a variant of concern.
Okay.
And this is where you've got both community transmission, but a real concern, or we believe that these three variants worldwide that are called variants of concern are increasing the transmission. So they've enhanced community transmission, and also concerns that they might be worsening the disease severity as well.
Sure.
So those are variants of concern. But in terms of the actual symptoms, the spectrum of symptoms for each of these variants is the same.
Okay.
The thing that we watch for is, do some of them create a higher number of severe diseases?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And if you had the coronavirus before, what are the chances, what is the reinfection rate here in South Africa?
It's extremely low,
okay.
But we have seen some, particularly people who got the infection in the first wave with original Wuhan strain, in the second wave, for example, and even now. Because the dominant variant has changed in South Africa. It would appear that for a small number of people, the antibodies that they produced in response to an infection in that first wave were not robust enough to fight off a second infection with the variant.
Okay.
But it's a small number of people that we've seen to be reinfected.
So if you had the antibodies for variant 2, for instance, in my case, those antibodies showed up in January. How long do you think, how long could the possible resistance last?
The protection. No, you're asking all the right questions. The answer is we don't exactly know, but we certainly think we're starting to see that what we think is protection sort of 7-8 months on. And it might well be, although antibody levels inevitably go down, and that doesn't mean to say that you haven't still got an immune response that will kick in. We're watching this very closely, but we think that possibly the protection from a natural infection might go on for longer. As I say, we've only got, remember, this is a new virus, so we're learning this as we get the data. But certainly 7-8 months, we're seeing protection.
Just a quick question or two here from our WhatsApp line, if you don't mind.
Good morning. My question for the COVID session is, have they figured out why some people is asymptomatic or get through COVID much easier than others? What's causing that?
It seems so random, Professor.
Well, it's a very good question. I mean, there are several reasons why that is the case. Firstly, if you look at the people who are asymptomatic, quite a lot of those will be in a younger age group. We're seeing them, you know, in the people in their teens and their 20s and even their 30s. That younger age group has got a much more robust immune system. So they're going to be able to sort of withstand the assault of the virus. The second thing is it depends on how much exposure to the virus you have. And that's why I know we keep going on and on and on about it, but you don't want to be sitting in a room without ventilation, without masks on, with a group of people. If you want to sit and have a discussion, even if it's people you know, sit outside, sit in widely ventilated rooms and be distanced. Because all the modeling is very, very clear that if you sit close to people and you're in a poorly ventilated space and you don't wear a mask or you don't wear it properly, you're going to get a higher exposure. If someone in that room has got COVID, you are going to get a bigger viral load under those circumstances. So that's the second thing that we know. And the third thing is that some people are definitely more vulnerable to severe disease. And if we just take one group, which is probably the biggest group in South Africa at the moment, would be the over 60s. Because again, the immune system is weakening, they are much more likely to get symptomatic disease than the young people, because the immune system is weakened.
We're running out of time, but I'm going to squeeze in one last question here.
Why does the infection stay stable for a long period, like 2 months, and then suddenly rise again? Why doesn't it just spread equal all the time?
Speaks to the waves. Why would there be waves?
Well, it's a very good question. We often see waves this wave pattern is very common for many epidemic diseases. One of the things that happens is that the people who are most likely to get it, so for example, in our setting, people who are frontline healthcare workers or traveling in very crowded taxis or in jobs where they have a lot of interaction. So when you have a first wave, the people who are most vulnerable socially for various reasons are likely to get it, and then the wave will go down. And then you'll see a sort of stabilizing. Now, in the case of COVID, what of course we've done, which has brought these waves down and keeps them down for a time, are all the prevention measures, the distancing, the ventilation, the masks, the lockdowns. All of that pushed waves down and keeps them down. But what we can see, and I'm sure everyone can see it, is that people get weary, they get tired, they don't wear their masks, they don't wear their masks properly, they go back into, you know, shops and restaurants reopen. We want society to reopen. We want that to happen. Once that happens, when you're going to get, again, vulnerable people without antibodies being exposed. And once you get one person or two people or 10 people with an infection, then you get this multiplication
factor. Of course. We shouldn't get complacent. Do you think we'll go into another lockdown in winter?
I think let's see what this wave looks like. As I say, I think that we're all hoping that this wave, which we think we might be seeing the beginnings of in several provinces, won't be as severe as previous waves. But I think that we're going to have to watch that space, and really it's going to be responding to the numbers is the answer.
Yeah. Well, we mustn't get complacent. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it so much. So many more questions. Hopefully we can talk again soon. Professor, thank you for your time. All the best and good health to your family. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was the good professor, Helen Rees. She chairs the South African Medical Control Council of South Africa. Once again, there was a whole lot there. And what we're going to do is we will podcast that whole chat. So you'd rather share the professor and the expert's opinion about what's going on with COVID here in South Africa and around the world before you share fake news. You heard it there from the good professor herself. That'll be on Audio On Demand. Give it a bit on jacarandafm.com.
Waking up with Martin Bester on Breakfast.
Every morning.
6 to 9 weekdays.